Not Your Poppies podcast is a place where booze and humor are used to bring you the real raw stories of women throughout history.
It's feminism with a hint of tequila.
No es cafecito con tu abuela.
It's tequila shots with your best friend.
My name is Carmen.
And I'm Laura. And welcome to another episode.
How was a concert?
You know what? It was so nice.
Yeah.
So this was Ariana's first concert. So I didn't drink, right? And I usually like go to concerts, get like wasted and have a time of my life. And this time I'm so happy I didn't drink because the ambience in his concerts is so happy and energetic.
Who is this?
Camilo.
Oh, okay.
Camilo, the Colombian singer. And his whole philosophy is so humble and so happy and so loving. Like, it's all about, like his songs are, most of them are dedicated to his wife and his daughter, his now daughter. And just the overall, it was so nice. And then this is one of the few musicians I've gotten to see, because I've gone to see singers, but he's a musician. So he was playing the drums.
Oh, I see.
The keyboard.
He's an artist.
Yes. Mm. Yes. Like, he sat there and one of his songs, he sang it in serenata style. So just with guitars, like him and the four guys who were on stage with him, they all had their guitars and he sang the whole time. And it was so beautiful.
Aww,
well, I think that's awesome. One word I would use to describe it. It was a beautiful experience.
Better than Carol G?
Yeah. Carol G is
disappointed.
Yeah. She's a singer and she shakes her butt, right? But she lacked a little bit of stage presence. I've heard that her concerts nowadays have gotten better. So I'm assuming with practice she's gotten better. But she did lack an experience. Does that make sense? Like, I feel with concerts, because you can put on their songs at any time and listen to them. Mm-hmm. But when you go to a concert, you're more there for like the experience. And Camilo brings that to you. Like a very artistic experience, but very beautiful.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. I'm not a concert goer, but I'm just glad that you were able to go out and have fun. And I didn't know Ariana was going to go. So that's super exciting. And you said it was her first concert.
It was her first concert.
Did she enjoy it so much?
She did. You know, Ariana's she's not a people person. Mm. So obviously I could tell she felt like awkward being surrounded by so many people. And she told me later, she's like, Mom, she's like, I don't know. She's like, I just felt like people were going to look at me if I started because there was a couple moments where she would be dancing and jumping. But then she would like stop. And I would look at her and I'm like, what's wrong? She's like, nothing. And then today she told me, she's like, it's because I thought like people were going to look at me. And I was like, Ariana, everybody's there too. It's like when you're at a concert, imagine it's you and the singer and nobody else. Like,
oh my God,
nobody else matters. I'm like, that's the only way to enjoy it. I'm like, because if you're worried about what anyone else is going to think, everybody's worried about the same thing and nobody's worried about anybody else.
So exactly.
Enjoy.
Enjoy. Enjoyed.
She recorded it. She was sending the videos to her friends. She was so excited.
Oh my God. How fun. And I'm glad that you were able to experience that with her and she got to have so much fun. And it's going to open like a brand new world for her. Like, now she's going to get into that whole vibe. So that's cool. Good job.
Thank you. It was a really nice experience.
It's better than going to karaoke at your local bar. And that's what I did yesterday. So,
is it? How was it? Oh my God. I miss karaoke with you. I'm a terrible singer, but I loved going to karaoke with you.
I'm an awful singer, but there is something about like the third drink that just possesses me to convince myself and everyone that I can do anything. And so I obviously Selena because duh. But I had fun. I had a lot of fun actually. So like funny story, me and the, I've talked about my neighbors because they are across the street, and the guys always hang out at the garage drinking their beer. And so the other day I tell my the wife, right, the neighbor, I tell her, I was like, are we trailer trash? Is this what trailer trash people do? Like, this is awful. I mean, I was like, I'm having fun. That's the worst part, is that I'm actually enjoying it. But it's like, I feel like this is what, you know, trailer trash people do. By the way, I grew up in the trailer. So I feel like I can coin that term because I grew up in trailers all my life. And so she's just like, I really think so, dude. I was like, no, we need to do something classy. And so we scheduled a double date yesterday, and she got a sitter, and we went to, they couldn't figure out what to do for dinner. So I was like, okay, if I'm going to choose what we're going to do, you guys just have to be game. And everybody's just like, no, yeah, we're cool. So I chose this restaurant, and it's new, but it's like really cute little drinks and cocktails and stuff, which I didn't have, but, the guys had so much fun having like smoked old fashions, and I didn't try it. I'm currently not eating sugar and carbs, and you know, me and my diets, I'm always on a diet. So we had tons of fun, and then we went out to karaoke, and her husband sang a song. I didn't know he could, no, he can sing. Like, I thought he was just joking around, but no, he could sing. And then his second song was Baby Got Back. And that was, you know, just like the cherry on the cake. Everybody had tons of fun, but obviously I had to go in there and do my little Selena moment because, but yeah, so that was my Friday.
Karaoke without Carmen Selena.
There's no karaoke. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
But I loved how you went from, we can't be trailer trash, so let's have a date night, and it's going to be karaoke at a bar.
It turned into trailer, but like, I need a change. I cannot do like just a garage, you know, on a Friday night when there's just so much life to explore than just the friggin' garage. But yeah. So
that is definitely a very married couple thing, I'm assuming. Yeah. Because like when you come out, like we'll drink like in my living room or my kitchen, but we usually have like a movie playing on and we're gossiping, so it's very different.
Yeah.
But then if we want to do something, we always go out.
But that's like, just like girl time, right? Like that's like a slumber party. It's fun in its own right. Doing this is like literally every day. I mean, and the men love it. The men adore their Bud Lights and their whatever the hell drinking.
Have you seen on TikTok, there's this series that I everything I've learned about the royal family, I've learned against my will. I'm going to state that right there. But there's this series where this girl, you know, that question that says, what is something that's classy when you're rich, but trashy when you're poor? And this guy, he duetted that with the fact that the royal family is basically trailer trash, but with money. Because they marry their relatives. Mm-hmm. None of them work, right? Because they all work for the family.
That's true.
They have pedophiles. That's horrible.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. Yeah. They they have that one old lady that yells at everybody and tells everybody what to do.
The matriarch. You need a matriarch.
Exactly. So he goes through this list, and then there's another TikToker that I love her her TikToks because they're so entertaining and educational. She mainly talks about the royal family. So she went more in depth to his points, and I'm like, oh my God, the royal family is trailer trash. So
trailer trash.
Next time you talk, like you feel that way, Carmen, just say we are England's royalty.
I'm New Mexico's royalty. Let's just call it that.
There you go.
Not England. What did I post on Facebook? New I will Mexican not cry. Royalty. Yeah, I won't cry for the queen unless England cries for Selena.
Oh my God, but so many people trying to push making you feel bad about her death. Was it shocking? Yes.
No, it wasn't. She's fucking old.
No. Well, yes, I understand. Well, yeah, but honestly, dude, I thought she was gonna live till she was like 110 or something.
Seriously.
And that lady scared me. There's this movie, this horror movie, where the guy enters a cafe and there's this old lady and she's eating raw meat. And then she like scales up the wall and she looks backwards and she like turns into this monster. And I swear the queen looked just like that actress. So I couldn't see a picture of the queen without thinking of that monster. I'm sorry. It sounds horrible, but it is what it is. That's how my brain just clicked it together. And so many people, like I remember my kids coming home, they're like, oh, the queen died. And I was like, okay. And then Ariana's like, what was she? I was like, oh, you know, today's colonizer. That's what she was. There's nothing different. I'm like, she sat on a throne of pain and suffering and never bothered to make amends for the horror her country has brought upon the indigenous community, the Black community, and any community of color. And therefore, I do not respect them, nor do I feel sorry. Is it sad that somebody in your family died? Yes, but that's on you. You're not going to make me feel sad for somebody I did not know, nor do I care about. Yeah. And so apparently Alberto went back and he told his teacher, because I guess the teacher's like, oh, we have to do a moment of silence. And Alberto's like, she was a racist. My mom said we don't have to feel bad for her.
So, yeah. I love Alberto. Good boy. Teach him young.
Yes. So honest.
No, yeah. I didn't feel anything either. I'm like, okay, well, I don't know. I saw it coming. I'm like, you know who I didn't see coming? Betty White. That one I didn't see
coming. That one was sad, though.
That one hurt me.
Really sad.
That one hurt me. But, you know, it is what it is. Awesome. Well, anything else? Any maintenance? Any polls this week?
I did do a couple polls. So
I look forward to the polls. I don't know why.
They're fun, right?
They're surprising to me.
And they're always interesting the way people, sometimes I'm just bored and like random things, like I'll think or see on TikTok and stuff. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what people feel about this. Like, in, you know, like in reality. So I did the poll about the celebrity alcohol brands.
Okay.
And 90% of our listeners agree that they're trash.
I want to know who's a person or who are the people that think that, like, whatever that small, that 10%, I need to know who they are.
And specifically, I want to know what brand.
What brand?
What brand they like. Because I guess we could say we're doing a monolith that celebrities' alcohols are trash, just because in general. But there might be that one celebrity.
I'm legitimate. I, you know, legitimately, I'm very curious. Exactly. And yeah. I'm okay to be swayed. Change my mind. So please send your recommendations, because I feel like that's really important to me. I am I'm a professional alcohol drinker, so I need to know these things.
Yeah. I was thinking and this is me, right? This is an idea, putting it out there.
No, I'm already immediately saying no to it.
Stop. Before you say no, listen to me.
Okay. What?
We should go to Total Wine and ask for samples of the celebrity brands and then do like a live tasting on our Instagram page.
That's actually interesting.
I told you. I mean, we get wasted for free.
Yeah.
And we try all these brands. So if they're trashy, we don't have to feel bad because we didn't spend money on them. And if they're not trashy and we're pleasantly surprised, then everybody could see it real time.
I feel like if we do that though, because I don't like to be a dick, but I feel like if we do that, we have to buy a brand if we liked it, the best brand. We have to commit to that.
If we like it, we will buy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so this is a perfect moment for somebody to send us their true suggestions, like which is the celebrity brand that we should try, and we will try it. And if it's good, we will buy it.
I agree. Okay. So then since I'm leaving to Albuquerque today, like as soon as we're done recording, I'm going to finish packing and get on my way over there. And now that we're in Albuquerque, this is what this is coming from an Aries, you guys. So we're committing to going to Total Wine.
You already said the word commitment. I'm already out.
Tasting of celebrity alcohol brands. So send us your suggestions via Instagram and we're going to do a live tasting on Instagram and you will see our honest reactions. Okay. And if we like it, we'll buy it.
There we go. That's fair. Just don't say the word commitment. It scares me.
Right?
It scares me.
It does. That's why I had like, Did you see like that pause before I said it?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like commitment in Aries. Do we just
scary?
Yeah.
We're spontaneous. Spontaneous. Yeah. Perfect. Awesome. Well, yeah, I'm totally down. Let's do it. Let's do it. We'll send another poll right before we get to the tasting just to make sure that we have our information. And yeah, I'm down. Perfect.
Love it. Love it.
Okay.
What else? Anything you wanted to?
No. No. I'm Gucci.
I know. This is a scheduling this episode has been a
headache. Oh, it was a fucking shit show, man. It was like, you're busy, I'm busy. The end of the month for me, I don't know if anybody works in the corporate realm, but Jesus fucking Christ, like turning your shit in the last week. And then when your last day is on a Friday, it's just a fucking shit show. There's nothing fun about the last week of the month. But here we are and it's happening. So let's get started. I want to listen to like part two of the story, the follow up.
Yes. So this story, man, I have been binge watching Malcolm in the Middle. Because it's
your choice of palate cleansers are very interesting to me.
There, it's stupid humor.
And you know what you should watch is really stupid, and you can probably get away with watching it. The kids and they think they're old enough. Is Bob's Burgers?
Interesting. Okay,
watch that.
Watched it, so
it's a good palate cleanser. It's funny. The kids, like most of the jokes will fly over the kids' heads, but you'll like retain this, you know, like the adult humor to it. Yeah. But just like that family is like, so it's not like the Simpsons, oh my God, or Family Guy that I hate. It's actually, they're very like sweet. It's a very sweet family. So watch
it. Okay. I've never watched it and I'm going to have to. Yeah, I've been watching Malcolm in the Middle just because it's very stupid humor. It's very like old fashioned, you know, early 2000s humor. And it's humor I could listen to and laugh without thinking. And that's what I needed, right? I needed something to kind of get me away from my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Just because overall, when I say I did my research, you guys, I'm talking about I read a good 10 articles on The Rape of Nanking and my next subject, which is going to be Comfort Women. And I read Wikipedia pages, and I'm not talking about one single page. I'm talking about, I read the General's pages. I read Japan, the Imperial Jesus Japanese Christ. Page. I read, I think maybe a good 7-8 different people's Wikipedia pages. And these pages are long. I saw documentaries on it. Have you noticed that I've been pausing, but I've been training myself to say documentary.
And I love it.
I'm like, Laura, say it right. Say it right. I watched YouTube videos because a lot of these are documentaries that were passed like in Asia. And so we don't have access to them, or they're not like on Amazon or Hulu or Netflix or whatever. So when I tell you I did my research, I did my research. So there was a reason I needed a palate cleanser, because after so much of this information and then having to kind of skim it down, it was really hard, because I feel all of it is important, but also I'm not going to make you guys sit here through 20 hours or more of research. So from last week's subject, which was the rape of Nanking, or the rape and massacre of Nanking, what do you remember about it?
Oh shit! I didn't know it was gonna fucking be a pop quiz. Well, that was atrocious to begin with. There was a lot of abuse. There was a lot of sexual abuse. There was a lot of fucking just rape everywhere. I mean, that's really the things that stayed with me from a history perspective. It was 1932, I believe, and. I don't know if that's right, but it was right before World War II, and it was Japan going into China and taking over, basically.
1937. Yeah. So it was close. Yeah. So it was the Japanese, the Imperial Imperial Japan's attempt at colonizing all of Eastern China. I mean, Eastern Asia, sorry, Eastern Asia. So during the rape and massacre of Nanking, we are made aware that when an order is given to the Japanese army to kill all the Chinese and to let nobody stand in your way, they took that to the most literal form. They murdered men in the hundreds of thousands. They murdered children, elderly, and they raped women.
Yeah, there was like no boundaries, right? Everything was a free for all.
Exactly. Now, like I said before, I would like to say that this was an isolated incident, right? Because of the horror of it, the monstrosity of, like, it's basically like their human side ceased to exist. And I would like to say it was a isolated incident, but if I'm being honest and we look at history, it wasn't. So I'm going to go into the next section because these are things that happened during World War II that are not as commonly known and should be, right? So today I'm going to go into the history of comfort women. So this actually starts before even the rape of Nanking. Between 1918 and 1921, the Imperial Japanese Army dispatched 7 military units to Siberia. After discovering an entire unit was infected with sexually transmitted diseases, or STDs, the Japanese military government discussed STD preventive measures, which is smart, right? You don't want all your soldiers going and getting STDs and then bringing them back home. I mean, that's smart. But rather than introducing safe sex or comprehensive sexual education, which is what you should do if you're trying to prevent an outbreak of STDs and unwanted pregnancies, they opted to design a system through which they offered a controlled sex service that would protect their troops. And this ended up laying down the roots for Japan's infamous comfort stations.
Oh, fuck. I know where this is going.
Okay. So, yeah, it's going there and even worse. So, comfort stations first appeared in 1932. They established comfort stations to stop the soldiers from going around and raping in the villages. So instead, what they did was they created a system where they would kidnap, hold hostage, and rape these women in one place as a government policy. So this was actual military government policy. After the horrendous massacre and rape of Nanking, Japanese Emperor Hirohito ordered more stations to be created to satisfy the Imperial Japanese soldiers. Because you stop rape by instead kidnapping the woman and then raping them in a place of comfort.
And then making it legal, legalizing it.
Exactly. Exactly. And
they're legalizing sex trafficking. Like, that's what they're doing.
And hold on to that thought, because that is going to play a very key part in the history after the comfort stations closed. Okay. So remember, they legalized it. So the quote-unquote recruiting for the comfort stations was basically aggressive kidnapping and coercion. The women would be rounded up on the streets of Japanese-occupied territories. And so I'm going to go through a list of the places where these women were kidnapped from. These included Korea, China, the Philippines, Burma, Thailand, Vietnam, Malaya, Manchukuo, Taiwan, the Dutch East Indies, Portuguese Timor, New Guinea, and other Japanese occupied territories, the Netherlands, and Australia.
You weren't kidding when you said, like, the Japanese last episode, that the Japanese were pretty much recreating what the Europeans had done, right, as far as the colonization. Yeah, I mean, for what year are we in?
This is
oh yeah, this is so early, my
fucking. So this God. Actually started almost right after World War One.
No, but like it's still so like relatively like new in history. Like I'm thinking, you know, like the fucking Europeans, they
this colonized. This is just last century.
Exactly, so, that's what I'm saying. Like
this is the thing, is it's not even. It, some of it is a little bit over 100 years old, but yeah. The majority of this isn't even 100 years old.
Exactly.
There are women who went through this that are still alive.
Yeah.
And like they really looked to Western Europe as an inspiration for what they wanted to establish in East Asia. And that's what they were doing. And you would say like, oh my God, but they were barbaric. Well, guess what? Western Europe was also barbaric in the way they treated the indigenous and black people that they brought to the, well, the black people that they brought to the Americas and the indigenous people that were already in the Americas.
Yeah, long live the fucking queen.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, that's why, I think that's why my brain, you know, like my ancestors associate the queen with that monster from that one movie. Cause I'm just like, something about this lady don't sit right with me. But going back to the Japanese, because they were a shit show on their own. So these were the countries, the Japanese occupied territories that they kidnapped women from. But there were also women of Papuan origin, including Japanese Papuan girls born to Japanese fathers and Papuan mothers. So remember when I said the Japanese had this saying, Asia for Asians. But in reality, it was more of a ethnic cleansing or a genocide of the fact that Asians to them were a very specific type of Asian.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Again, this is all rooted in white supremacy and, you know, so yes, they attacked their own if they were not fully Japanese blood. So these comfort stations, they were located throughout Japan, China, the Philippines, Indonesia, Malaya, Thailand, Burma, New Guinea, Hong Kong, Macau, and French Indochina. So one of the ways that the woman would get coerced into becoming comfort women is that the woman would answer ads for jobs posting. So remember, during this time, the vast majority of Eastern Asia was going through an extreme poverty because of the war, like extreme poverty. A lot of the men were dying. So a lot of women were left to look after their families, the elderly, right? And so the Japanese would post ads in the local newspapers asking the women to come work as nurses, factory workers, and other odd jobs. But the majority of them were like factory workers. And the ads would go somehow like, come over here and work for 1 or 2 months and you will get this much in salary. And the salaries were really good. So a lot of young women, and I'm talking about like teenagers, a lot of girls who were like 14, 15, 16, 17, they would answer because at that moment, they had to be the breadwinners for their families. So they'd be like, okay, I'm going to go work 2-3 months and come back with a great salary to be able to feed my family, right? That was their mentality. Although the women were recruited from a lot of different places, the majority came from Korea and China. Once recruited, the women would be taken in groups to one of the stations. If any of the women opposed, they would be beaten or murdered in front of the other women in the group. And this would ensure that after one outburst, the rest would be too scared to defy them. The stations would move as the military units moved. So if there was a comfort station nearby where you were recruited or kidnapped from, chances are by the end of the war, you were nowhere near your home village anymore because the comfort stations moved as the military units moved, okay? Upon reaching the comfort stations, the girls would have their pictures taken and they would be assigned a Japanese name. The picture, along with a name plate of their Japanese name, would be hung on a board. So a lot of these places were like old rundown factories, old rundown warehouses, right? So in the documentaries, they would walk in and immediately the first thing you would see was a board with a picture and a nameplate, like a wooden nameplate that kind of hung like a keychain. And the soldiers would go up to the board and choose the nameplate of the girl that they wanted. And they would know that a girl was available if the nameplate was still hanging on the board. But if it wasn't, then that meant that another soldier was currently with the girl. Sometimes they would form a line and wait their turn. The girls reported that they would be raped between 5 to 12 times per night.
Wow.
This happened every single night.
What would they do for because I'm guessing a lot of these women would get pregnant or something.
That is a great question. And I feel you're not going to like the answer to that, but I will be getting into that.
Okay. So I like any of this story, but continue.
Right? Like, Carmen, how dare you not be fascinated by my information?
No, I'm fascinated. It's just awful. It's, well, I mean,
it is.
Says me, huh? Says me.
Exactly. Yeah, you can compare, right? Because even one rape alone, to hundreds of rape, it's still rape. You can compare pains. But something about this trauma just hurts my heart, right? This happened, like I said, every single night that they were held captive from the first night they arrived. So like immediate, and sometimes it happened even before they got to the comfort stations. Like on the way there, if the route was more than a day and they had to like stop in camp overnight somewhere, the soldiers would begin raping them wherever they set camp. The Japanese military provided the soldiers with condoms. You want to know what the name they gave to the condom was?
What was it?
They gave it a military term as a name that translates to assault number one.
Assault number one. That's okay.
That was the name of their condoms.
What's assault number two?
That's a great question. But it shows you their mentality, that they realized that raping these women and taking these women from their communities was a way of gaining control over these countries. Because like I said before, women are are the most targeted when it comes to war, because that is how you are able to ensure the downfall of a community, is get rid of their women.
And now the comfort women that you mentioned, was it just women alone or was it other, did they have like men or?
No, it was just women.
Just women. And then what are the ages?
I don't like the term women. And this is why I kind of switched my language to girls, because the majority of women were actually girls when this happened. And I will go into some testimonies later on. So again, they named their condom assault number one. They also distributed disinfectant for the soldiers to apply to their genital areas before and after intercourse. And the girls were required to receive periodic examinations from the military doctors. The doctors would examine the girls openly in front of onlooking soldiers, and some of the doctors would also rape the girls before, during, or after the examination. And one of the documentaries I watched, it's called I'll find, let me see if I could find it. It has to be here in my notes. Okay. It's called 63 Years on Unfinished War. And it's directed by Kim Dong-won. And one of the girls, she's giving her testimony about how they took her to the doctor to examine her. And she said, oh my God, it's a doctor. It's a doctor. This guy is educated. He's going to help me. He's going to realize that, you know, that I've been raped, that I've been abused, and he's going to help me, and he's going to help me. So she's taken to the doctor and she's like super optimistic. She's like, this guy is going to help me. And she says she gets there. And the doctor just starts examining her. Like the soldiers that took her are still standing there. And the doctor just lays her down on the table, yanks up her skirt, and just starts examining her, like super barbaric about it. And at this point, she's in pain, right? Like if anybody's gone to the gynecologist, you know, it's not a comfortable experience. Now imagine if this is being done to you in like the most barbaric way, in a dirty office, in front of a bunch of other guys who have been repeatedly raping you. And then after the doctor was finished, she states that he looked at her and he made a comment that she was really pretty and proceeded to rape her right there on the table.
Jesus Christ.
And she said that every single time after that, that the doctor went to the comfort station to give the girls their examinations, he would rape her before he started the examinations and after he was done.
No reason. It was just to be a monster.
Exactly. Exactly. Many soldiers did not use condoms, leading to many of the girls getting infected with STDs or getting pregnant. So to answer your question, when the soldiers found out a girl was pregnant, they would beat her to punish her for getting pregnant, because how dare she, and also to cause a miscarriage. A lot of the girls would end up carrying the dead fetus for days or weeks until their body aborted it. Carrying the dead fetus would cause the girls to get incredibly sick with nausea, fever, chills, severe cramping, and hemorrhaging during and after the abortion. The girls continued to get raped the whole time. They didn't stop. Even if you were sick, even if they knew you were pregnant, they had just kicked you to an inch from death. They did not stop raping you. Girls who got too sick or their body was like refusing to abort the dead fetus, they would be transferred to a military hospital where they would have their uteruses removed. So they're like, okay, we don't want you to get pregnant. All right, then let's just take your uterus. And yeah. And it was sad. I saw a couple of testimonies of women who had to go through that and just how these were girls who at one point their dream had been to grow up and be a wife and a mother and have their own family. And everything was just taken from them. It was taken from them. Some of the torture that the girls were forced to endure included branding. So they would brand them, they would burn them, their flesh, specifically around their breast, their genitals, and their butt. They would like give them like a kind of like jail tattoos, right? And they would tattoo their bodies, and a lot of them would end up like severely infected and just horrible. They would twist their fingers with chopsticks. They would kick them. They would punch them. They would stomp them on top of the nightly rape. Few women were able to escape, and some were released when they were deemed too sick and weak, under the assumption that they would die on their way home. So when they saw that they were like near death, like really near death, they would be like, oh, you're free to go home. Because they assumed like she's going to die before she gets home. And it's not going to be our fault because she's not under our care anymore. A lot of them did. A lot of these women did. They didn't get to go home. When the Japanese were defeated, the soldiers abandoned the comfort stations, leaving the women behind, many of them still tied up. Some of the women were freed after the Japanese surrender, but a lot of them were killed in the process when Allied forces bombed the Japanese military station. After the women were released, they were left to figure out how to get home on their own. This was particularly hard for the women who had been taken by boat to the stations and those that were far away from home. Because after having survived a traumatic and horrendous situation, they were basically abandoned in a foreign country without the ability to speak any of the local languages to communicate. The end of World War II did not end military brothels in Japan. In 2007, the Associated Press reporters discovered that the United States authorities allowed comfort stations to operate well past the end of the war, and that tens of thousands of women in the stations were forced to have sex with American men until U.S. General Douglas MacArthur shut the system down in 1946.
How did I know we had some type of fucking contribution to this shit?
Isn't that horrible?
It's awful. We don't even know about it. But it's not known.
Why do we not know? Because if we do know, then we're going to find out that we also perpetuated some of the rape and violence. We might not have kidnapped them.
Yeah.
But we also took advantage of the fact that they were just there. And I say we because, I mean, I was born in the U.S. I live in the U.S. So, yeah.
It's our history.
We are responsible for that bullshit.
Yeah.
During the time that the stations operated, from 1932 to 1946, between 100,000 and 410,000 women were enslaved and raped in at least 125 comfort stations. Now, I know you guys are going to say, like, Laura, why are your numbers so vast? After the war, the Japanese military burned all their records, right? So we have had to go by accounts of the militaries of the countries that were fighting the Japanese, as well as the people, like the women who came forward and said, I was one of them. So we've had to go through a lot of this, and Japan highly denies the majority of this happening, or they downplay it, saying like, no, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't like that, because they believe that by burning their records, they would be able to burn away the history and not be held responsible for it. In 1946, the International Military Tribunal for the Far East, led by the U.S., found seven Japanese military leaders, including General Hideki Tojo, who was the Prime Minister of Japan during World War II, and Iwani Matsui, who organized the rape of Nanking, guilty for war crimes, crimes against humanity, and crimes against peace, and sentenced to death by hanging. So there was a total of seven of them that were sentenced to death by hanging. The subject of the crimes committed against the comfort women were never brought up. The stations, the condoms, the disinfectant, the kidnapped women, everything was provided by the Japanese military, and they have never been held accountable for the pain and suffering that they caused these women. Most of these women were young girls who had never had a sexual experience before, and their pain and their suffering was not seen as important to their governments because their own governments failed them by refusing to hold Japan accountable. The U.S. failed them because we were the leaders in the tribunal and we refused to bring it up because we had also participated, because instead of liberating them, we allowed our soldiers to rape them. This only caused their suffering to continue even after the war had ended. So the following are testimonies from an article. The article is, "In the Philippines, comfort women who suffered in World War II fight to keep from being erased from history," on thelily.com. So this is one. Narcissa Claveria. She was around 12 years old when Japanese soldiers arrived. After her father was unable to answer their questions, he was tied face down to the post of the house, and they skinned him like a water buffalo. Her mother was raped. Her two brothers were forced into labor. Two more siblings were killed. And her remaining sisters, Emeteria and Osmeña, were taken to the garrisons. The last thing she heard was her father screaming as they were dragged away from their house. Their house was burnt after they were taken. So Narcisa said that she was separated and she was taken to nurse an injury because, like, during the whole debacle, she had been injured. And so one day, a soldier named Tarasaki told her to wash up and he gave her a change of clothes, right? So she was kind of separated from her sisters, taken to, you know, heal her injury. He washed her, he gave her clothes, and that night he raped her. When she saw her sister Emeteria again, Emeteria had cigarette burns all over her skin. The girls were abused every night, usually in front of each other, for 3 months. By the time they escaped, Emeteria was no longer herself, and Osmeña was never seen again.
Jesus.
This is the testimony of Estelita Dai. Dai was 12 when, on a visit to the market, she saw Japanese soldiers beheading suspected guerrillas and dumping their bodies into a well. So she tried to run away, and she found herself hauled into a truck with other local women. She was raped on her first night at the garrison. When she fought back, the soldier grabbed her by the ears and knocked her unconscious. And the soldiers had interpreters because she said that an interpreter had took pity on her and warned her not to resist or she would be killed. So this is her quote. "So every time I was raped, I would just close my eyes and cry." She stayed there for 3 weeks and escaped when American forces took the area. And the following account comes from an article. The article's name is 70 Years Later, A Korean Comfort Woman Demands Apology from Japan, from the Washington Post. So Lee Yong-soo, Lee said she was asleep in her family's farmhouse when she heard a neighbor calling and went outside. Soon she found herself with four other girls being marched off by Japanese soldiers, then forced on a series of journeys by train, truck, and ship. This is her quote. "At first, the other girls tried to protect me because I was so young. I saw the soldiers on them, but the girls put a blanket over me and told me to pretend I was dead so nothing would happen to me. I didn't know what they meant. I was only 14. I didn't know anything then." Soon after reaching the base, she said she was told to go into a curtain cubicle and wait for a soldier, but she refused. So as punishment, she was brutally beaten and tortured with electric shocks to her wrist. And she said that after that, she obeyed every single time. So these are just three testimonies of women who survived it. The women who had been forced into sexual slavery became social outcasts Many of them died due to the sexually transmitted infections or the complications from their violent treatment at the hands of the Japanese soldiers. Others couldn't bear the pain anymore and committed suicide. Because of the treatment these women received after going back home for decades, the history of the comfort women went undocumented and unnoticed. When the issue was eventually brought up, Japanese officials denied the allegations and insisted that comfort stations had never existed. In the 1980s, some women began to share their stories. In 1987, the women from South Korea started discussing the horrific details of their ordeals publicly. In 1990, South Korea openly criticized a Japanese official's denial of the events. In the years that followed, more and more women came forward to give testimony of their own torture. In 1993, Japan's government finally acknowledged the atrocities committed against the women. Since then, however, the issue has remained divisive. The Japanese government announced it would give reparations to surviving Korean comfort women in 2015. But after a review, South Korea asked for a stronger apology. Japan denied the request. A few dozen of the thousands.
Like, you're literally given the opportunity to kind of just fucking take it back or fucking acknowledge or something, and you refuse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because after I have tortured you and forced you into this, I still have the right to tell you how I should apologize.
Yeah. Or that, hey, the fact that the fucking, let's, and you know, we're using countries, but if like I'm the abuser, I'm sorry. It's just like the fucking victim is telling you it's not good enough.
Yeah.
Fucking redo it. Listen.
We need to listen to the victims. And this goes back to why I don't stand the whole matriarchy and patriarchy of England, is they have never fucking apologized for the bullshit that they've done. And same with the Catholic Church. They've never apologized for the bullshit that they've done to the indigenous people. And
it's most systems of power are never going to acknowledge or apologize. And that's what's fucked
up. It's like
up.
They can't accept that what they did was wrong. Like, in their mind, they still want to believe that they had some right to do. Like, they still want to find an excuse. Like, no, we had to do it. Like, we're sorry we did it, but we had to do it. And it's bullshit, right? Like, if a victim is telling you what you're doing is not enough, we need to listen to the victim. So a few dozen of the thousands of women forced into sexual slavery by Japan are still alive. A few dozen. In 2015, Lee Yong-so, who I read her testimony earlier, she is a 90-year-old survivor from Korea, and she's been very vocal about her desire to receive an apology from the Japanese government. She told the Washington Post, Sorry.
Was that a burp?
It was.
That was literally, didn't you say on one of these podcasts that you don't burp?
I hiccup, yeah. But that came out as that I was talking. Came
like a fucking trailer trash burp.
Was it? Was it that bad?
No, it was trailer trashy.
Oh my gosh.
I'm call you out. No, don't. Fernando, please leave this in for the people. The people must know the truth.
They must know.
I am a victim of your atrocious crime right now.
I'm so sorry. I apologize for my trailer trash tendencies. So going back. So Lee Yong-so, who is a 90-year-old survivor from Korea. So this quote comes from her directly. I never wanted to give comfort to those men. I don't want to hate or hold a grudge, but I can never forgive what happened to me. And with that, I finish my story on comfort women.
First of all, what a fucking fantastic job. Like, you did a fantastic job covering that story. I don't know who could cover all those details better than you, honestly. And it's definitely a heavy one. It's a sad one. I mean, I was choking up. I was like, how the fuck? I had myself on mute because there was a lot of moments where, you know, we're like, the fuck. It's to me, I don't know. It's fucking it. Humanity is a piece of shit. And then I think to your point, like, can we say it's an isolated incident? No, this shit happens, right? It happens.
So with that being said, and thank you, because I actually wrote this down. So remember how I told you that I watched a documentary? It was made from a Spanish journalist, and it's called La Guerra en Contra de las Mujeres, or The War Against Women. And you can find it on Netflix. So these are just some statistics. Between 1992 and 1995 in Bosnia, 40,000 women were raped. Between 1985 and 2006 in Uganda, 4,000 girls were kidnapped and raped. In 1994 in Rwanda, 250,000 to 500,000 women were raped. And between 1998 and 2013, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, 200,000 women were raped. Now, these four countries I just stated were going through war, whether it was like civil war, like guerrilleras, or it was genocides, ethnic cleansings, wars were just, you know, just war. And these are the untold victims of the war.
Because the
this happened now that we've been alive and breathe. I was born in 92.
Mm-hmm.
This was happening then, you know?
Yeah, in our lifetime. Yeah. It's insanity how much the fucking world can hate women so much, right? And that they've been objectifying us for, you know, when you think about like shit like this, I don't know, sometimes I'm like, oh, the 1400s, the 1500s, you know, that shit was in style, whatever. But like today, it's just, I can't, I don't know. Makes you really wonder. Then look at our legislation, right? Women can't even have autonomy over their body. So
we've always been the... I recently heard this quote, and it was so beautiful, and I'm probably gonna butcher it, but every time you look at history, there's always a subject and an object, and women have always been the object.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're seen as disposable. Mm-hmm. We're seen as territory, because when you attack women, you're attacking the men's pride, because you mm-hmm. are basically attacking their territory. So mm-hmm. not only are you stealing their land, but you're also stealing their women. Men don't own us. You know, I'm nobody's property. And the fact that every single woman that has been born has been viewed as an object
mm-hmm.
just goes to show how, I think that's one of the reasons we started this podcast, mm-hmm. was we wanted the women to be the subject of the history.
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. I will tell you right now that I'm not going to go with my story, because I think your story was so powerful and it needs its own episode for sure. And there's just no follow-up. I think it's important to, you know, give it the respect that it deserves and give it the space that it needs. But I do need a palate cleanser. So tell me something fucking funny. My story was in that.
Dude, I finished Schitt's Creek. I finished.
Let me ask you this. Have you started House of Dragons?
I have. I watched the first two episodes, but here's the thing, you guys. I actually have the book, like the history of Westeros. So I actually already know what's going to happen. And I already wrote the story.
Fucking nerd.
I'm proud of my nerdic tendencies. Okay.
Don't make it a personality trait. My fucking God.
But I have noted. So I've only watched the first two episodes because shout out to my cousin Natalia. I steal her HBO login. Oh, he didn't steal it. She shared it with me. And then I watch it. I haven't had an opportunity to watch it, but I have noticed just from like the comments people have made that the storyline is a little bit like, it's not the
same. It's so confusing.
Well, it's not the same as it is in the actual story.
Okay.
Because so the House of Dragons is based on the story called The Dance of the Dragons.
Yeah.
When the Targaryens are fighting, they basically start a civil war within each other to try to to take the throne.
Okay. That makes sense. That's kind of what's happening. I think a lot of people are also comparing it to the original Game of Thrones. And so you have to get used to like new characters. It's not the same timeline as, I think it's about 200 years before.
It's 200 years. Yeah. 200 years prior.
Yeah. No, but I think for me, what's been frustrating, which is fascinating, right? Getting to know that whole history, because Game of Thrones actually alludes to it. It alludes heavily to the whole Targaryen bullshit. And I always wonder like, what happened? Tell me more about this Mad King, but it seems like it's way before the Mad King too. So
yeah.
Fascinating, but very confused, not very easy to follow along.
You know what? One of these days I'm going to bring my freaking book that I have that shows you the lineage of the Targaryens. Did you know that Robert Baratheon was related? Like he was a Targaryen by blood. So after he overthrew the Mad King, he actually was the rightful heir of the throne, because at that point, nobody
knew. Is that the guy that got killed by the fucking pig?
Yes. Yes. Okay. By the wild hog. Yeah. The boar or whatever. And the reason why is obviously we find out is because he hated his wife because he had always been in love with, the Stark girl. So yeah, but I actually, it's fascinating the fact that this man was able
was a Targaryen.
He was related to he came down from the Targaryen line.
Oh, okay. So that's why he went into the throne. Okay.
Yeah, but his father, so he was Baratheon because of his father, but his mother was Targaryen. And
but the Lannisters had no business there. They pretty much stole it.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So fucking confusing.
It is, but when you read the book, it actually makes a lot of sense.
Too much Sweet Home Alabama over there. Like,
what is trashy when you're poor and classy when you're rich?
The royals.
Marrying your own siblings.
There we go. But I've been trying to get into it. I've been trying to like it. I'm trying really, really fucking hard because I hate everything that people like. It takes me 10 years to watch something. It took me 10 years to watch Harry Potter. It took me 10 years to watch Game of Thrones. Like, That's how I roll. And I'm actually trying to go in with the people and be like everybody else. And yeah, nah. But Dahmer. I finished it.
No,
I couldn't. I finished it. Yeah.
Yeah. You have a better stomach when it comes to that than me. Says the girl who just covered a story on Comforter Women. But I can read about it. I cannot watch it.
That's fair.
I couldn't make it past the third episode. Remember last time when you came over, I think I was on the second or third. I was like halfway through the third episode. Haven't finished that episode. And I'm like, I'm not going to.
No, I don't think you should. I think it's very intense, right? I feel like if you don't feel anything watching it, you should fucking talk to your therapist about it.
I think it was as like a source of entertainment. Huh? Talk to your therapist. Like if you watched it as a source of entertainment.
Well, it is entertainment. It's a fucking series.
No.
It's not.
No, but I mean like entertainment, like you were excited, like, ooh, da-da-da. You know what I mean? Like this isn't.
I think when you watch a series, right? Watching a documentary is very different. Reading a book is very different. But when you're watching a series, right? You are going to have all those emotions. You're going to feel empathy, but you're going to feel disgusted. You're going to feel fascinated. You're going to feel all those emotions. But when what I'm trying to say is like, when you're watching this and you're watching it and like, desensitized, that's the word I'm looking for. When you're desensitized to the brutal murders, right? And you're actually, I don't know. I think that's different. That's different because the series is made to be enjoyable. It is enjoyable. Getting to learn about the father. There's an episode when he, And it's interesting, right? One of his victims, like it seemed that there was actually a connection there, and you're almost rooting for the bad guy. They've antagonized him, or you still know that he's a criminal, even to the end of the entire series. It's like, he's spoiler alert, he dies, because I feel like everybody knows about Dahmer today, right? He dies in prison and they're killing him, but they don't let you just sit on his death. They don't let you just, oh, pobrecito, right? He deserved a second chance. It's more like they, as soon as they're killing him, they're flashbacking to all the times he killed, right? So I think the way it was produced and it was shown to the public, I think they did a very well job. And it's very, very, very hard to make something like that without having people be fascinated by a monster. And that's something that you get, right? People getting fucking tattoos. Oh my God. I saw a shirt that said, choke me like Ted Bundy and eat me like Dahmer, sexualizing these motherfuckers, right? So there are very sick people in the world. And those are the people that need to talk to their therapists about the series. But yeah, guys, continue. I Tarea, you should watch Bob's Burgers, palate cleanser. You'll have fun. It's very family oriented. If you can't do Dahmer, not holding it against you. I think it's safe to skip it if you need to.
But I had to. I couldn't stomach it. I was one of these people that to me it was too much grief, too much pain, and I've never been like, I like the paranormal horror. Like the draw, like, you know, that's what I like. The paranormal, the
it's fantasy. It's not real.
Fantasy. There you go. The fantasy.
Yeah.
I cannot do gore killings. I wasn't able to watch the Saw movies. I wasn't able to watch Hostel. I wasn't able to. There's a lot of those shows that I haven't been able to watch. Even some of like the American Horror Story ones, even though it's fantasy, there were some episodes that it was hard for me to sit through because I knew that there are monsters out there in the world who do this. I mean, look at our stories. All of our stories, not all of them. Some of our stories have monsters in them. Monsters that were humans like me and you, made out of mm-hmm. bones and meat and muscles, and they were out there doing this shit. And I think that's why, to me, I can't stomach that, because that genuinely traumatizes me and keeps me up at night, because I am one of those people that, well, now that I bought my house and you know, I live in an area where I don't know why, when I was in a apartment, I felt more comfortable, and sometimes I would forget to lock my door, but that's on me. But now I check every single window, make sure it's locked, check my doors, make sure they're locked. You know, I'm just traumatized because there are monsters out there, you guys. And we think, oh, this happened way back when. This was 70s, 80s, 90s, 50s, 100 years ago, blah, blah, blah. There's still monsters out there. They just haven't been caught.
Yeah. Absolutely. They're still there. And yeah. Hey, something good that I look forward to is seeing you this week. So get your bags ready. Pack up.
Alcohol tasting.
Yeah. Alcohol tasting.
I'm just going to go get drunk. That's what I'm going to do. I commit to getting drunk, which I know I can go through with. So
that's easy. 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 I'm
excited.
Perfect. So I will see you in a few hours, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I'll see you, but... It'll be nice that you're just like around the corner, but I have an entire week to plan and hang out with you so we can do our little alcohol trash tasting. So
yes, but we're New Mexico Royals.
Exactly.
Yes, thank you guys so much for sharing the space with us today. And if you stuck through my whole story, I want to thank you because I know it's not easy. And I hope that this knowledge that I have shared with you guys, that you guys use it to open up educational discussions about how women need to gain control and be the subject of our own stories.
Awesome. And guys, thank you again. We will see you next time on another episode. And remember, this is En Cafecito con tu Abuela.
It's tequila shots with your best friend.
That's right.
Total Wine.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I will see you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.